would you introduce yourselves, please?
I am Fitz.
And I am James.
Fitz in the tantrum.
What is the one thing that everybody has missed the past 50,000 times? Because we all know the story. You've toured relentlessly. You put out the EP, then it got put out again.
The amount of hard work it really takes to make a band succeed, you know?
Do you have a perception of where it's all at this moment in time, other than, you know, now it almost pays the bills?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, our show is so dynamic and we're running around. It's hard to, like, really have a moment of reflection in it. But at the same time, there was at least two or three moments where I looked out and I go, what a journey we've been on, you know, because we did start from very humble beginnings, playing in front of 30 people our first show, to that all culminating with playing Outside Lands on the main stage in front of 20, 30,000 people. It's pretty damn incredible for a little band that could, you know, we made that record in my living room, you know. It was like James and I went to college together, and that's how our friendship started, you know. And, you know, we at least every couple months we started to look at each other and we're like, who would have thunk that this would be the past? We had no idea that this would be in our future together, you know.
We all had our fingers in many different things, you know. I was freelancing as much as I could in every kind of style and genre, there's a G word, that I could. And like you said, who would have thought that this would be the thing I was doing? You know, I was playing with, you know, worldwide known hip hop acts and insane indie songwriters and Latin artists and all kinds of people. But this was the thing that caught. And the more I think about it, it's like this is what had the heart behind it. And, you know, enough people picked up on that. The ball got rolling and it's just been this snowball thing.
And it really is, though, and I love talking about this, it's perception reality, because a quote that I read recently of yours was that it's, quote, finally paying off. So people probably see you standing up there in front of 30,000 people and say, these guys are making millions. Perception reality, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we finally are able to pay our bills with what we get to do, finally, you know, but I can tell you, for each one of us, you know, this band really took us all to the brink. We really had to sacrifice a lot, you know. You know, it was like to the point of like losing homes and having to move and how am I going to pay next month's rent? It was really hectic for us. Even as stuff was starting to blow up for us, we still couldn't pay the bills, you know. Going out on the road as a six-piece band is expensive. You know, it's not a...
You're not Simon and Garfunkel.
No, there's not two of us and an acoustic guitar. It takes a lot of work. There's logistics, travel. I mean, just to fly 6, 7, 8 people around the country is not cheap. So it, you know, as things started to blow up for us, it was like another 9 months, 10 months, even beyond the point where, like, people started to really know about us and our music and it started taking up, that we were even being able to finally get to a point where we could pay the bills. You know, it's like, look at all these amazing shows, amazing things. How come I'm still broke? You know, it's like, just hold on, you know? And everyone was looking at me like frustrated. I was just like, just a little more time, guys. Just hold on, hold on.
Danger Bird seemed right, didn't it? Because I imagine that it's not like labels knocked at your door because of the mix of what you do. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's realistic, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was true. You know, we were having all this buzz happening and we still couldn't get anyone to kind of partner up with us and take a chance on us. And it actually ended up being our local label that is down the street from where I live,
yeah, right.
You know, that finally... You know, that all culminated at South by Southwest 3 years ago, where we played the Pablo Foundation benefit,
right,
and Jeff got to see for firsthand, not what industry people thought of us, but that show was open to the general public. They came, they saw, and people flipped out. And I think Jeff and his wife witnessed this and were like, I think we need to be in partnership with these people, you know?
Well, and the hardest thing for a band like yours, and I'm telling you what the hardest thing is, but, you know, I'm using rhetoric, but it's true, is that getting a live sound, because hearing the record is one thing, seeing the band in its entirety live is a whole nother story, right?
Yeah, that was a big issue for me starting out. I mean, when we made the record, I kind of went to town with overdubbing horns and turning myself into a sax section. And of course, I can't do that live, so I had to find where I fit in. And that ended up being part horn section, part rhythm guitarist, you know, part auxiliary percussionist, if you want to think of it that way. And just thinking of my instrument as serving a greater role than just stabs and, you know, stuff like that. So it has made me kind of develop as a rhythm player, as a horn player in general. And I know that kind of applies in different ways to everyone else in the band. They've kind of had to stretch out into the sound and fill up the stage, you know?
Okay, so let's attack it. Ready? So this, every friggin' review, right? They're a soul band. They're, you know. Now, again, maybe it's me. I grew up with Top 40 radio, and you can slice soul down. You know, look, you've covered Sarah Smile. I've seen you do it, right? You know, you did a cover today. But you could slice soul into 50,000 slices. You can slice it into Motown. You can slice it into Stax. You can go a million times. You can go to high records. You can go for hours and hours and hours. So one of the things that I heard you describing about when the second record comes out is, the quote was, advancing the sound.
Well, I think for us, one, yes, the soul music influence is undeniable, but equally to that record was a whole sort of 80s British invasion influence, which was actually drawing on 60s soul music, but filtered through London and in the 1980s, you know, and it was a very different approach to it. It wasn't just a...
Oh yeah, Culture Club was soul. ABC,
oh, yeah.
My friends at ABC.
Talking my language. And within that as well was, you know, there was an indie rock sort of aesthetic and the DIY approach to making the record. There's definitely a hip hop influence in the way that the beats were constructed on the first record. So our record was actually a hybrid of many genres. There's other people that we love that are doing soul music, but they're doing it in maybe a more traditional way, a purist kind of way than we are, where we are really sort of an amalgamation of pop music and pop music in the best sense of the word, soul, 80s, indie, hip hop. For us, there was always an 80s element to this band. And I think on this next record, what happened was that the soul music influence is still there, but maybe the 80s influence has taken a little more of a foreground to the music. You know, we didn't want to make the same record. We wanted to push ourselves, and that meant doing a lot of experimentation with songwriting and with the arrangements and the sounds that we were using. You know, and we were lucky enough to work with Tony Hoffer. And Tony turned out to be truly the perfect person.
Oh, yeah,
because
absolutely.
He was able to really mix. You know, on some of these songs, we literally have programmed drums, and then three different drum kits recorded in different ways and layered them, but at the same time was able to make them all just cohesive and feel like one entity. And, you know, we definitely wanted to do all that kind of thing, and Tony was the perfect guy to help shepherd us through that.
That's great. You see, it's funny because the earlier stuff, the stuff I read, you were talking about how tricky it would be to be with a producer, because it couldn't just be an engineer. It really had to be somebody who was going to be a member of the band, so to speak, and a musician also, right?
We had the blessing and the curse of coming up in the soul revival, in quotes, thing. You know, like our contemporaries, when we first started out, were Amy Winehouse and Sharon Jones and all these people that we were lumped in with. And that was good for us, but at the same time, you get the soul pigeonhole. So to bring in like the post-punk influences that we came up with and the new wave stuff that we came up with, finally we're incorporating the other stuff that are in our consciousness and into the sound.
I do a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs as the bread and songs by anybody else in between.